For most Americans, the first port of entry into the countries that used to lie on the communist side of the Iron Curtain is the fairy tale city of Prague. But the city that feels to me like the real powerhouse of the region is actually Budapest, the capital of Hungary. Like a full-bodied Hungarian wine, Budapest can overwhelm you at first, even while it intoxicates you with what it has to offer. The city is like two cities in one, actually, split by the Danube River. The hilly west side is called Buda, where you'll find elegant remnants of the glory days of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Across the river, the flatlands of Pest contain the Parliament Building, the Opera House, the business sector, as well as the more urban-feeling town center and Jewish quarter. Let's get a street view picture of the city now, where you can enjoy a floodlit night stroll or ride its great public transportation network to enjoy the very best of Budapest. To orient us, we're checking in with Esther Bokros. She's a tour guide who lives in Budapest. She's joined by Cameron Hewitt. He's the co-author of the Rick Steves Eastern Europe Guidebook, and Cameron knows how to present the very best of Budapest for American visitors who may only have a couple of days to get a flavor of the city. Esther and Cameron, thanks for being with us.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Budapest really dominates Hungary. I mean, Esther, you come from Budapest. It seems like in Hungary, that's by far the most important city.
Absolutely. But the reason is that the Austro-Hungarian monarchy had two capitals, Vienna and Budapest. So everything was concentrated in these two cities. All the train lines, for example, started from these two cities. All the ministries, administration was put into these cities. That's why you see today glorious buildings in both cities, although the countries are very small today.
I wondered about that. So it's thanks to the Habsburgs' determination to make a grand capital, because, of course, the Habsburgs ruled much more than Austria-Hungary. They had many different lands, and they had to have acceptably grandiose capitals of Budapest and Vienna. And today, the infrastructure survives.
More or less,
More or less. Now, when we think of the lay of the land, a lot of people don't realize it used to be two towns. Tell us the story about Buda and Pest.
Let's start with the names first. Buda, it comes from a Slavic word vada, which means water, because the city has a lot to do with water. First of all, there is the Danube in the middle of the city, and there are lots of thermal springs under the surface of Budapest, actually 28.
Thermal springs?
Yes.
They say in Hungary, if you scratch the surface of the land, you find
nearly
hot
about
water.
Under 85% of the country, if you scratch it, you get
a mineral
water.
Spa. You got a long pipe, you got yourself a hot springs.
Absolutely. So that's the part, Buda. Pest is the flat part. It's always warmer a little bit. Buda is the hilly part.
Okay.
And historically, Buda was the first capital of the Hungarian kings in the 14th century. One of the kings moved it from a smaller northern town. And then he decided to build a castle there. And then he put all the administration around it. And the wealthy nobility lived around the king.
Okay, so all the royal stuff, the castle, the great cathedral, the fort, monument, all of that would be up on the hilly part, Buda.
Up on the hilly part, absolutely.
And then the business area in the modern grid-planned city would be Pest across the river?
Yes, absolutely. That would be today the political, educational, business center of the city, the Pest side.
So Cameron, is that fair to say Buda would be the hilly place with the grandiose buildings? And how would you characterize Pest then?
Yeah, that's exactly right. What's interesting is those historic connections are still there today. Buda is still, it's not just hilly, but it's still the more conservative, a little bit wealthier, kind of the fancy homes, and the Buda Hills is kind of the Hollywood Hills of Hungary. All the kind of wealthy, conservative, old-fashioned folks live on the Buda side. Pest is this flat, modern, urban, liberal, progressive, a lot of funky nightlife, lots of hipsters.
So for a traveler looking for some action, you'd probably focus on Pest.
And I'll be honest, I've been to Budapest 20 times and it's been years since I slept on the Buda side. It's very charming and pleasant, but if you want to be close to the best new restaurants and a lot of the great sites, Pest is really where it's at.
Of course, you got this grand river, the Danube, cutting right through, and we had historically two different towns. Do the towns sort of put their back against the Danube, or do they face the Danube? What's the relationship in Budapest to its river?
The city absolutely faces the Danube. It's really the lifeline of the city. There's even some very powerful, famous Hungarian poems about how important the Danube is to Budapest and to the Hungarian culture. There's lots of beautiful bridges crossing the Danube. You can zip under it on the subway, but I prefer to walk over some of these grand bridges. The famous iconic chain bridge is the most famous of these. There's even a new boat taxi system or a boat bus system, but it's basically boats that go up and down the river, stopping in several strategic locations along the riverbank.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking about Budapest with two guides that know Budapest very well, Esther Bokros, who's from Budapest, and Cameron Hewitt, who co-authors our guidebook to Eastern Europe and has a particular interest and passion for Budapest. Esther, Cameron mentioned the Chain Bridge. I find that very evocative, very powerful. What is your favorite bridge over the Danube in Budapest, and tell us why?
My favorite bridge would be probably the Liberty Bridge. If you go to Budapest today, you will recognize it easily because it's green, and it's beautifully illuminated green at night. That's an iron bridge that was inaugurated in 1896, and that was called Francis Joseph Bridge because of the Austro-Hungarian emperor first time.
So again, the more the Habsburg connections there.
Yes, absolutely, because he was set to hammer the last nail in the bridge.
Okay.
And I think it's very stylish, beautiful ironwork, and it has been fantastically restored with old-fashioned lamps, old-fashioned little statues. And in fact, it's a little bit infamous because many suiciders jump from this bridge.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. We're talking about Budapest. And Jack's on the line in Charlottesville, Virginia. Jack, thanks for your call.
I was hoping your guides could give me some advice. My wife and I will spend a couple of nights in Budapest prior to going out on a river cruise. And I was wondering if you could lay out the pros and cons of staying on the Buda side versus the Pest side of the city.
Cameron already said that it's been 10 years since he stayed on Budapest. Or Buda, he likes Pest.
I really prefer Pest. Buda is very charming. It's very pleasant. There's a lot of historic sites, but it doesn't have quite the life, kind of the urban liveliness that you get on the Pest side. And there's some really pleasant neighborhoods over on the Pest side. You're in much closer proximity to the best restaurants, great sightseeing, you know, beautiful riverfront promenade, all of that sort of thing. There are some nice areas in Buda, to be sure, and there's some great accommodations there as well. But I just find that there's a lot more vitality on the other side of the river.
In communist times, I remember the place everybody stayed was the Hilton Hotel in the castle on the Buda side.
Esther, yes, we were thinking of.
Yeah, I think most people would think of the big old famous golden glass kind of windows of the old communist Hilton Hotel there. But I agree with Cameron, the action's on the Pest side.
And the castle in particular is sleepy. I mean, there's neighborhoods in Buda that are a little livelier, but that Hilton is right on top of the hill. It's right in the middle of the castle, and there's just really nothing going on at all after dark there.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
You know, Jack, before you leave us, I just got to use this opportunity to let Esther and Cameron talk about the ruined pubs, because when you're in Pest, you've got all these wonderful sort of bohemian chic places that are just, well, I'll let Esther explain it. Esther, what is a ruined pub?
A ruined pub is basically a little empty space between two quite ruinous buildings. And the point is that there is a bar set up in this empty place, and the walls of the ruinous buildings are very artistically decorated. Each one is different.
Artistically decorated, if you like street art. Or
if you like street art.
Crazy
but some
stuff,
of them
yeah.
are really, really, some of them are crazy, but some of them are really stylish. They are very, very popular, especially after 10 o'clock, I would say. And you can have a nice drink and just enjoy the atmosphere. There are lots of young people going there. It's really, really popular, and most of them have live music as
And the
well.
People speak English, and tourists are made to feel very welcome. Cameron, explain the experience you've had in a ruined pub.
Yeah, I find them very, very accessible, and that's exactly right. What's amazing to me about it, too, is they're proliferating like crazy. A few years ago, there were two or three. There's one street where the most famous original one called Simpla was for many years, still is there. And on my last visit, I was amazed. In just 2 years now, there's 15 more within about a block walk of that. It's just, the nice thing as a traveler is you can kind of hop from pub to pub and poke your head in the door and pick the one that you feel comfortable in. There are some that are really ratty and ramshackle and graffitied and are really much more catering to young folks. And then there are ones that are a little bit more upscale. They're still rough around the edges. That's the point. But they're a little bit more upscale, a little bit more comfortable. I'm thinking of a couple in particular, but it's just really a great scene to just kind of go out, explore, see the latest places, and pick the one you like best.
And we list our favorites in our guidebooks. You know, Jack, I've got a pretty disgusting work ethic when I'm in Europe, and I'll never forget last time I was in Budapest doing work on our guidebook. I'd go out to check out the pubs. I'd make these friends. They'd get me drunk, and I'd stay out until the wee hours. It's just so uncharacteristic, but I would have a blast, and I would go from ruined pub to ruined pub, and they took me in such a charming, friendly way. And, you know, I'm just an old guy twice their age that doesn't speak their language, and we had a blast. So
I will look forward to that. Thank you all very much.
Have fun, Jack. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking about Budapest with two guides who know Hungary well, Esther Bokrus, who lives in Budapest, and Cameron Hewitt, who's the co-author of our Eastern Europe guidebook and our guidebook to Budapest itself. Esther, one of my favorite places in Budapest is the Memento Park. I've always been fascinated by social realism, this kind of propaganda art, and it comes in terms of big, overbearing statues that were on all the squares during communist time, keeping the people down, reminding them of the power of the Soviet ideology and so on. Of course, after freedom, all of those statues were torn down, and in Budapest, they were dragged out to a suburb, put into a park, and today it's a place where locals and tourists can go and see 50 or so of these statues that all have this communist ideology. What's it like when you go out there and when you take tourists out to Memento Park in Budapest?
For all those people who have never been to Central Europe during those days or who have never even lived that time, it is really interesting because this is something a little bit a forbidden word for them, it seems like. So they always find them sometimes very funny, sometimes hideous, some of these statues, but they always find them very, very interesting. To us,
it's propaganda all the way.
It's absolutely propaganda. To us, it's funnier today, although we had to look at them for decades.
As you were a child and had to look at that, they must have been very mean-spirited.
Yes, very mean-spirited, and they were not really liked. But today, it is funny to look at them, but it also, we acknowledge that this is part of our past.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't forget that this was part of our past.
It's a powerful site. And Cameron, when you go out there now, you can actually go to the little kiosk and buy some kitschy souvenirs from the Soviet times.
Oh, yeah. They have a CD with the greatest hits of communism. You can get a little model of a Trabant, which was the old, the cheapo communist era car that everyone
had. You can have a safari with a Trabant.
A what?
A safari. You can drive the Trabant. You can drive it.
Can you do that now?
Yes.
So there's all of this nostalgia for the what has been 20 or 30 years now since
it,
freedom.
It is very popular now to drive the Trabant. You can do it now.
If you like your nostalgia full-bodied, you'll love Budapest, where the city's impressive history remains very much alive, from medieval times through the Soviet era. Esther Bokros and Cameron Hewitt guide us through more of the highlights of Budapest and take your calls at 877-333-7425, coming up in just a moment on Travel with Rick Steves. Travel with Rick Steves is made possible in part by the European Union delegation to the USA. The European Union received the 2012 Nobel Peace Prize for promoting peace, human rights, and democracy. Information available at euintheus.org.